Percentages can be tricky. That is all I am going to say. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Tuesday, today, the 26th of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We begin today with some unexpectedly good economic news. We'll have a reaction to that good news, and then we will have a reality check on that reaction to that good news, or as we like to call it on this program about business and the economy, context. So, to get to the point, y'all are feeling a little bit better about things, it seems. We learned this morning from the good people at the Conference Board, that's a business research group, we learned that consumer confidence in this economy is up this month after tanking in April. The reaction to that good news, because it is good news, prompted this reaction from White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow on Fox News this morning.
The third quarter could be the fastest growing quarter in U.S. history. The whole second half is going to be very strong.
And here comes the reality check on that reaction to that good news. First of all, let us remember we are in the second quarter right now, April, May, and June, where the percentage decline in gross domestic product is expected to be epic, worst ever. Retail sales were down last month. The unemployment rate is up where it hasn't been since the Great Depression. And there is still oh so much uncertainty about what's going to happen next. Now, why am I saying all this? Economist Megan Green, a senior fellow at Harvard's Kennedy School, helps us out with that.
For example, if you say an economy is running at a level of 10, it's producing 10 things, let's say, and there's a 50% decline, then that brings it down to 5.
Okay, but then?
And let's say the next month, actually, things go really well, and you've got a 50% increase.
Sounds great, right?
It's from a lower number, so that doesn't bring you back up to 10. It actually only brings you up, back up to 7.5. So the percentage changes can be really misleading.
Mr. Kudlow, this morning, it has to be pointed out, and as he said, is talking about Q3, July, August, and September.
So I think that as the economy opens up, we should see the economic data improve. And depending on how you're looking at that data, it will either improve a little or it will improve a lot.
For instance, the Congressional Budget Office figures there will be a better than 5% increase in GDP growth in that third quarter Mr. Kudlow was talking about. But to review,
a lot of that depends on what you're comparing it to.
Now, why are we telling you this? I realize that's the second time we've asked this, but this matters. That third quarter GDP number is going to come out just 5 days before the election.
I think the Republicans will come out and say, look, we've got the best GDP data ever, and we've got the best jobs data ever looking at percentage changes. And they'll be right, actually. Technically, that's true. But at the same time, the Democrats will be saying, well, but we're still really far below where we were before this crisis even started, and there's a lot of room for improvement. And they'll also be right.
And so,
I think people will be getting these mixed messages on what the state of the economy is. And actually, both of them will be correct. You just need to learn how to read the data to understand what it all means.
Or, as once again we like to say around these parts, context. The context on Wall Street today was virus? What virus? We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The trading floor of the New York Stock Exchange is back open, kinda, with some new social distancing guidelines. Told you about that on Friday, I guess, with the president of the NYSE. But there is another New York institution where it's a whole lot harder to figure out new rules to keep everybody safe. Broadway shows have been closed since mid-March and are going to be closed until September at least. So we thought about who we know in that world, and we got Eva Price on the phone. We had gone to see her in New York last fall back, you know, when we could. She's the producer behind the revival of Oklahoma, also Jagged Little Pill. Tony Award-winning producer, I really ought to say here.
You know what? Something's wrong.
What?
Something's wrong with my voice memos.
Making radio from home? Well, it ain't always easy, gang.
Oh, we got it.
There we go. This is awesome. Okay,
so good. I'm now on airplane mode. I've got voice memos open. I've got an earphone in my Zoom.
So here's the first
question.
I hope
I don't get struck by lightning.
What's more challenging, producing a Broadway show or getting an interview done working remotely? You tell me.
I think getting everything done remotely is actually more challenging than producing a Broadway show, interviews aside.
Oh, man. It's craziness. Well, look, let me jump right in here, and I want to pick up sort of where we left off last time. One of the things I had asked you when we sat down at Sardi's that day in New York was what a Broadway producer does day to day. And so my question now is, what does a Broadway producer do day to day when she can't leave her apartment?
It's a great question, and you're not the first to ask. And weirdly, I'm busier or as busy, and that's the thing that when the day ends, I'm quite shocked about. It's the same work, but the process of it is on phones and on computers and Zoom.
Yeah. What's the mood of your cast and your crew and your folks who, you know, 60, 75 days ago had things basically shut down on them out of the blue, as did so many other people?
You know, the mood for them is similar, I think, to the mood for you and me. It's this mood of up and this mood of down. And at Jagged Little Pill, we've created a weekly check-in, and we just sort of talk about our week and try and just distract and connect about anything other than the fact that we're not performing 8 times a week. Because when we get into that, it's really depressing and really sad. And more depressing and sad is when we get into the question of when we're coming back. So we sort of avoid that. But the mood is some days up and some days down.
Well, look, far be it for me to take you farther down, but we do have to talk about what Broadway is going to look like when it comes back, because there are challenges that are legion. I mean, there are so many obstacles to this.
It's the antithesis of who we are. There is no social distance for a love scene or a dance scene or a duet. So the fact that we are the antithesis of what the world is requiring of us right now, it's worrisome. It's you did bring me down, friend, but
I'm okay. I'm really sorry.
That's okay.
But look, it's reality, right? And you can't tell me you're not thinking about this stuff, I'm sure, in the wee small hours. But I do kind of have to point out that, like, even Disney has said it's not bringing back shows, right? Like, Frozen's going to close, and I wonder how you, who, I don't even know what the word is for you. You're a force there in Broadway, but you're not Disney, right? So, you know, Jagged Little Pill, what are you going to do with that?
I think every decision that every producer is going to make about bringing their show back or not is going to be dependent on 100 reasons and not just the pandemic being one of them, truly. I know when we think about our show coming back and the why we're bringing it back, it ticks all the boxes. It is a show about resilience, and it's a show about how a group of people get through a tragedy and turn to each other and sing everything is going to be fine, fine, fine. So that's the thing that keeps us going. That's actually what helps us sleep at night. The things that wake me up is the how, you know, how much money will it cost and how much time will it take and what will be the restrictions for our cast and our audiences. I do think about it every corner of the day.
Last thing, and I'll let you go. What's your sense of timing, or are you not willing to go there?
My sense of timing is about as valid as my guess of tonight's Powerball number. Is there even Powerball still?
I don't even know. That's a good question.
I don't know. I think it's going to be several more months. I hope I'm wrong, but that's what I think.
Ava Price, she did Oklahoma on Broadway. She did and is doing. We'll put it in present tense. Jagged Little Pill. Ava, thanks a lot. It's good to talk to you. Stay safe.
Thank you, Kai. You too.
We're all experiencing this pandemic in different ways, right? But if there's anything that comes even close to being a universal truth right now, it's the desire to stop being cooped up. And yes, the urgency of this desire is relative, depending on the space in which you are cooped. But imagine, if you will, weeks of sheltering in place when your place is a 25-foot by 8-foot RV. And not in some remote campground out in the woods either, but smack in the middle of a city. For our series Adventures in Housing Marketplaces, Amy Scott has that story.
To get a feel for what it's like to live in 200 square feet, I asked Michael and Becca Nunziato to grab a tape measure.
Okay, so you're going to sit on the bed, and you're going to measure from the bed to the kitchen sink.
We're at 58 inches, so under 5 feet.
You know, it's always negotiating how we walk past each other.
And not just each other.
We also have a dog, a cat, and a hedgehog.
That would be Francie. She's no bigger than a softball, but her digs are palatial. She lives in the bathtub, with Becca's clothes hanging from a rod overhead. Her share of the utility bill isn't small either.
Hedgehogs have to be kept at 75 degrees Fahrenheit or more. And so we could be pretty happy with blankets and sweatshirts, but the hedgehog does need a heater running constantly.
Fortunately, they can shower at the house where they park. Michael and Becca are both 27. And to understand how they got here, you need to know a little about the housing market in Denver. In a word, it's been booming. 2.5 years ago, they had an apartment near downtown, and their rent kept climbing.
And there was no way we were going to buy a house, and we had started thinking about alternatives.
He and Becca both wanted a simpler life with a smaller environmental footprint. So the alternative they chose was a 2017 J-Flight travel trailer with big swoops of black and gray on the outside and maple cabinets and a queen-size bed on the inside.
We found this model new and in great condition for $15,000.
They got a loan from their credit union.
Our payments come out to less than $300 a month. Basically, a car payment for a house.
In the beginning, they parked in a friend's driveway, paying a few $100 for the space, plus electricity and water. But then
we got reported to the city because a neighbor across the street apparently was unhappy about us living in our RV on the driveway.
The good thing about a home on wheels is that within an hour and a half, we were out of there.
Now they're paying another friend to park in a fenced backyard in an undisclosed location. They covered the windows so the RV doesn't glow at night. If you're familiar with the whole hashtag van life thing where young couples head into nature and post glamour shots on Instagram, this is not that. They've actually only camped once. It is Colorado, so they can see the snow-capped Rockies.
But I have to look through the alley and the car lot and a bunch of power lines. So
we hear gunshots and firecrackers and car mufflers and sometimes whoever just decides to wander down the alley.
Someone tried to break in once while Becca was sleeping. She froze.
I did not want to call the police because I was afraid that I would get in trouble for living in the RV.
Eventually, the person went away. Sheltering at home during the pandemic has been just another part of the experience. Some days the trailer feels too small.
If you don't do the dishes immediately, they take over. And when you can see your whole house from anywhere you sit, you will always see the dishes.
That doesn't bother Becca as much, which creates its own tensions. For the past couple months, she's been working from home, directing a podcast incubator for women of color. Michael manages a coffee shop in downtown Denver and was furloughed for a while, but he's back at work. It helps that they're paying less than half what they spent living in an apartment.
So having lower monthly expenses and also having some savings has meant that we're really grateful that we haven't been put into as bad of a position as a lot of people.
Their adventure may soon come to an end. Becca's been accepted to Harvard Divinity School. If the campus reopens in the fall, they'll haul the J-Flight to Cambridge. And if they can't find a place to park, they'll use it on the weekends. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Coming up.
Luckily, our technical director had already worked with a company in town to design a dispenser for our popcorn bags.
Reopening is a big challenge, but it sure does have a lot of little details to pay attention to. First, though, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial is up 529 points today, 2.1%, 24,909 or 5. The NASDAQ gained 15 points, about a 10th percent, 93 and 40. The S&P 500 up 36 points, 1.2%, 29 and 91. There, pharmaceuticals shot up as the race for a COVID vaccine continued. Novavax added 4.4% today. Merck jumped 1 1/10%. Gilead off 0.2% today. Theme park company Six Flags flew up 9 8/10% today. Although, you know, depending on the ride. Bonds fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 0.69%. You're listening to Marketplace.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line. And your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. Hong Kong has long been a special economic case, an Asian counterpart to London or New York. But that's at best up in the air right now after Beijing's moves last week to sharply crack down on dissent in the territory. The Trump administration has threatened to undo American policy toward Hong Kong in response, and also the special treatment it gets under American law. But today, the U.S. business community did ask the United States to hold on. Marketplace's Scott Tong has today's installment of our increasingly regular series, The Law of Unintended Consequences, Is Real.
For nearly three decades, the U.S. has given Hong Kong special status, letting goods flow back and forth without tariffs and people to fly with no visas. Other countries do the same, which to independent financial analyst Fraser Howie in Singapore makes Hong Kong a vital business hub.
A very unique environment, different from the mainland. Hong Kong was always seen as a low tax, exciting destination, a can-do type of place.
If Washington ditches Hong Kong's special status, there would be serious implications, warns the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. One thing at stake is Hong Kong's reputation as a high-trust place to invest, to hold crooks accountable, and to enforce deals. Jean-Pierre Cabestan teaches political science at Hong Kong Baptist University.
A lot of companies choose Hong Kong to adjudicate their disputes with Chinese companies. There are judges from Australia or Canada sitting together with local Hong Kong judges.
Still, U.S. officials have threatened to revoke Hong Kong status to counter what they see as Beijing's aggression. And that would be the nuclear option, says Ho-Fung Hung. He teaches political economy at Johns Hopkins.
If U.S. really revoked the trading status permanently, there will be no turning back, and then China will definitely change its policy toward Hong Kong.
In other words, accelerate the end of financial Hong Kong as we know it. Hung and others think the Trump administration may choose partial sanctions instead, say restricting U.S. exports to Hong Kong. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
If you were able to take yesterday off, and I was, thank you, Amy Scott, one hopes you're feeling a bit more recharged as you face a four-day work week. What if, though, that was, you know, every week? The Prime Minister of New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, said last week she would love to see companies there try it out as a way to boost domestic tourism on those three-day weekends. But a shortened work week can have other benefits, too, as Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino reports from the Workplace Culture Desk.
Like pretty much all companies, the social media app Buffer has been struggling with higher than usual stress and anxiety among its employees over the last several months.
And instead of saying, no, fight against that, be as productive as you always are, that didn't make sense for us.
Instead, says HR head Courtney Sider, they moved to a four-day work week at the beginning of May for a month-long experiment.
Can we meet existing deadlines that have already been set? Can we make sure that we're taking care of ourselves and also still hitting this new bar of productivity?
So far, she says, they're hitting those goals and getting good feedback from the team. Downtime is more important than ever these days, says David Rock, co-founder of the Neuro Leadership Institute, which consults with companies from Microsoft to Netflix on how to apply neuroscience to work. He says fears about personal health and the economy are overwhelming workers.
And so we need some recovery time to have time to like organize the rest of our lives and have loving time with family and friends, and even if it's just online.
He says, paradoxically, turning off work often enables us to do our best thinking, and a shorter work week could help workers better unplug. That's what Amy Balliot found at her Seattle creative agency, Killer Visual Strategies, when they switched to a shorter work week a few years ago. She says the extra bounce of energy her team got after a long weekend more than made up for the lack of a lazy Friday.
So we suddenly get so much more productivity out of less days worked in the week.
Not that it didn't come with some hitches. She says it took about a year to work out scheduling challenges with clients, staggering off days to make sure someone was available 5 days a week. And shortened work weeks could help those who aren't able to benefit from working remotely. Some restaurants, car shops, and call centers have found ways to make it work with a shorter week. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
It's going to be a good long while, as Eva Price was saying, before the theater business gets back to anything close to normal. But it's not just live theater, right? Stephanie Silverman, one of the 10 people we started talking to for our series about the American labor force called The United States of Work. She runs an independent movie theater in Nashville, Tennessee called The Bell Court, and she sent us this update on what's going on with her a couple of days ago.
We're still running programs. We're still sort of releasing movies every week in this sort of virtual cinema world that we have going right now, and a lot of film classes and stuff online. So, you know, the work carries on, which has been good. It's helpful to keep these days feeling productive, I guess. But it is, you know, like some of the things that have been funny have been to see like how old habits really die hard. So, you know, we'll have a class online, a bunch of staff members will join in and just kind of be lurking around watching. And then when it's done, there will be a like a post-class Zoom call just with staff, sort of doing what we used to do in the lobby after a big event. You know, you sit around, you have a glass of wine, you chat, you kind of download. We still really need to do that. We need to have that sort of moment with our colleagues. So it's, you know, all in all, it's good. But now, you know, now we're starting to look towards what's it going to look like when we reopen. So that's kind of the corner we're starting to turn, and installing things in the theater and getting the place ready for that date that we still haven't identified to open the doors again. It's certainly been a learning curve for us. Luckily, our technical director had already worked with a company in town to design a dispenser for our popcorn bags made out of plexiglass. So he got in touch with them again. We're investing in things like electrostatic misting and looking at UV systems that will help kill germs within the HVAC system. You know, it's like this sort of getting up and rolling again is not an inexpensive endeavor, actually. It costs money to make sure that you can sort of invest in the new technologies that keep people safe when we finally get to the point where we can cautiously and with great amounts of social distancing have people back watching movies.
Here's the update, by the way, on the other 9 people we are following in this series that we started back in February. Remember, the original conceit of this thing was to follow 10 people who, based on data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, formed a kind of a representative sample of the labor force as a whole. So of those 10 people, 2 lost their jobs when states started locking down. 1 has since started working again. 4 are essential workers and still physically going out and going to work every single day. The other 4, including Stephanie Silverman, are now doing their jobs from home. All of them in some way, like all of us, hit by this virus in one way or another. We have lots more, by the way, on the weird things this virus is doing to this economy in our newsletters. You can sign up at marketplace.org/newsletters. This final note on the way out today, we began with context. We will end with it, too. You might have heard or seen this morning the latest readings from the A-List Housing Indicator, what's known as the Case-Shiller Home Price Index. It was, in fact, up almost 4% in March. That is a year-over-year figure, so March this year to March last year. The catch, of course, as with everything in this economy right now, data from March 2020 and earlier, not totally relevant as a point of comparison. All right, we are on our way, but here, yet one more moment of economic awareness for this Tuesday, looking ahead to the end of the week, because it's never too soon for that. We're going to get a report called Personal Consumption Expenditures on Friday. It's the Federal Reserve's preferred measure of inflation for a bunch of really technical reasons. Anyway, what you need to know about it is basically your economic vocabulary homework for this week. Look up for me, would you? Disinflation. Not deflation, disinflation. Okay? All right, there you go. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Samantha Fields, Ben Hethcote, Sarah Menendez, Eliza Mills, and Janet Wynn. Satar Nieves is our executive director of on-demand, and I am Kai Ryssdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.